Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The halls have been decked, but they're not the only thing that is going to be decked this week. It's VGC, a video game podcast, with me, Jordan Midler, Chris Gillian, and Andy Robinson. It's a fun show this week, but we've got a bit of news to talk about up front. But before that, how are we doing, folks? Chris, how are you in person? I can touch it. I'll just touch his knee. Just touch his knee right there.
I'm well. I'm very tired, but I'll tell you how tired I am. Here's an anecdote.
Okay, here
I'll
we go.
With an anecdote, if that's okay. I was coming out the tube station just to get here. And you know, the tube, the posters kind of repeat over and over again.
Uh-huh.
And I was just kind of glimpsing. I saw a poster. It was a wee kid holding up a sign that says, where is Elijah Robertson or something? I was like, fuck, I hope they find that kid. This is shame. And I'm up a wee bit further and I see him again. Oh, I'm like, they've paid a lot of money to find. And it wasn't until like the fourth or fifth repetition that I saw it. It was like one of those bootleg Where's Wally books. And the kid's like holding his own book, his own name on it. I was like, well, at least they found him.
Oh, is that like one of those books that you can get for your kid and you put their name in,
kind of
thing? Oh, that's some proper stuff.
I thought you were going to wake up and call it in. I found him.
He's found himself.
He's on platform two.
Sorry, guys, I can't do the podcast this week. I'm knee deep in this extreme Elijah Robinson
mystery. I'm away hunting a child.
Not for the first time.
Well,
how are you, Andy?
I'm all right, yeah. I was very sleepy on the district line on the way here. Murder. Mm. Murder. Long journey.
Yeah, why is it so difficult getting anywhere around London? Let's do London chat, because I think London's depressing as a place.
Is it, though?
Yeah.
Is it? Well, it's depressing. Yeah. I mean, Britain's depressing.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It's easy to get around it, though.
It does impress me how basically wherever you are, if you open up maps, it will be like, oh, just get over here, just take like 15 different things. See, in Glasgow, Chris, as you know, we have the most elite subway system in the world. It's two circles. You either go left or you go right, and that's it. You can never get lost in the Glasgow underground.
Yeah.
What time did you come down here this morning, Chris? I got up at 5 in the morning to get my flight.
I wasn't so bad. I left the house just after 7, got here for about 1:45. I'm a train man rather than a plane man. But I enjoyed it. I was just like, for the first time in ages, I finally got to just sit and play games.
What did you
play? I spent 4.5 hours playing Dr. Mario 64.
Do you see what happens? Like, and look at the opportunity to place. Like,
but listen, I'll give him a logic behind it, because I know I've got Mario sitting there, Mario Wonder sitting there.
Right, to be for the listeners, this man's not played Mario Wonder, Zelda, Pikmin, what, Alan Wake,
Spider-Man. Oh, Spider-Man 1. My logic is that I was up really late last night writing stuff, and like I didn't want to start Mario and then fall asleep 30 minutes into it. Because that's just miserable. I need to be fully ready for it, because that's an event for me.
Yeah, and the 4 hours you had wasn't enough time to really get into it.
Well, I was just worried that I would fall asleep in it and like struggle through it. And there's people talking around about it, and it's really annoying. Is that it needs to be optimum conditions for a Mario game?
Do you not get a first class carriage to yourself? No,
not
in the Andy Robinson
time. Those days are gone.
I sat and played Vampire Survivors on my Steam Deck OLED the entire way down. It was fantastic. What a tremendous game. First, before we get into the thousands of questions that the VGC maniacs have asked, there was a bit of news this week. Insomniac was the victim of a huge data breach following a ransom last week. As you may have seen, this was handled very sensibly online by everyone. They were super calm about it. But Andy, could you give us a small rundown of how we covered it? And the reasons we didn't cover certain things.
I'll just take that cough sweep back.
Literally asked him just as if
I was like, literally, onk. What are we talking about?
Insomniac, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, there was a significant kind of data breach at Insomniac, the PlayStation-owned kind of Spider-Man studio. It was a ransomware kind of situation where I think they asked for $2 million and Sony obviously didn't pay the money. And they've released, 1.3 million documents, and that includes tons and tons of personal information, basically like HR documents and people's passports and payroll, I understand. So quite a malicious, you know, leak, really, if you want to call it that, hack. So, I mean, we decided pretty quickly on the morning, didn't we, that we just weren't going to cover it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's for the sake of people's livelihoods, amplifying this, for the sake of what looked to be on the surface some game names, you know, some stuff they're working on. You know, I didn't want to touch it. We didn't want to touch it as a group. It is a real thing. I mean, you're seeing, you know, kind of some developers talking about on social media now, about there's some Insomniac developers have had to, like, have had all their cards frozen and stuff like that, you know, because of fraud, like, already. There was someone else who was involved in a previous data breach who said that someone came across state lines with a shotgun to for her house because they'd been banned from an online game because her address had been leaked in a, like, it's a real thing, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, I understand, you know, it's not, we're in an easy position, right? I mean, we're an independent publication. You know, we don't need, we can forgo the traffic. You know, it's very easy for me to say, well, we're not going to do that. There's lots of other people who are in different situations, you know, big publications that are under different kinds of, you know, pressures and work in different conditions. You know, I fully empathize, you know, with any other, you know, journalists who you know, had to make a more difficult decision than we did. You know, every day we decide as journalists what the value is in our coverage. That's not unusual. You know, so I've got nothing against anyone who's put it up. It's just we've decided not to do that.
Fair enough. I think that's a very concise way of going through it. And it's not like as if because we didn't put it up, people who want to access that information of the shiny stuff can't. You get anything to say on it, Chris, or do you concur with El Capitan?
No, pretty much. It's just it's a dodgy situation. You always get people saying, oh, well, what about in the past? It's like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
It's a difference. There's a difference between something just leaking, like people keep bringing up the Microsoft stuff. And that was kind of their fault.
They uploaded thousands of their own documents.
So there's a bit of a difference there, but with something that literally a week ago was being auctioned off for $2 million, it just feels a bit grubby. And
I mean, there's a clear difference on reporting on some documents that Microsoft have accidentally uploaded to a court, public court system, and covering, you know, and we've, by the way, we've, you know, more significant stories that have value, right? Like, oh, they're planning a new console next year, revision, or, you know, they considered buying this company, or they, you know, there's this wrongdoing or issue. There were more significant stories in that as well. There's no different. We look at any story. Is there value in covering this or not?
Yeah.
It just adds another layer that, well, in covering this, you're also amplifying, you know, this kind of leak. And, in a way, also like sort of like giving them a bit more payoff to do it again, right? Like, I mean, there was a really great piece on the site Aftermath this week where he wrote that, you know, kind of secrecy in games has always been ridiculous and it's always, you know, kind of frustrated me somewhat. But these reveals have almost become a currency, right? And these hackers know that because they're like, well, we're going to take that away from you for the next 10 years. And you're kind of validating that a little bit by amplifying that stuff, and you are amplifying it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are sites with 100 million monthly readers who've covered that the info. I mean, to Chris's point, there's a clear difference, you know, between covering, you know, something that's been illegally stolen along with people's personal information, and, you know, something that's appeared on a retailer, something like that. And also, there's a clear difference on covering the leak and the content of the leak.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw a lot of confusion last night. I was speaking to, you know, people who kind of DMs me and stuff to ask, you know, more about this. And there, you know, I don't understand, because you covered the Capcom leak, because Capcom were hacked in a ransomware attack in exactly the same way in 2020. And I didn't think I had to explain to them that we didn't cover that. You know, we covered the fact that the hack happened.
Yeah.
We didn't cover any of the information whatsoever. You know, I can't speak for other websites, But there's been, you know, chatter this week. What are you, double standards? How comes, you know, when a American company, you know, this, it happens to them, you don't cover it. But, you know, Japanese company, what's going, but, you know, we made the same decision then.
Yeah.
I you know, we didn't cover any of the content on that leak for the same reason, because people personal information in there. There's a clear difference. You know, like, it's you know, kind of, it's, we have a duty to our readers, right? And, you know, we've clearly got standards, but it doesn't mean we don't have empathy for the people we cover, right? Like, I don't think anyone who reads VGC can, you know, kind of sincerely accuse us of holding back. I mean, we cover leaks all the time, right? I mean, 99% of the time, if it's in the public domain, we're going to cover it. Mm-hmm. But it, for this particular one, we've decided not to do that, right? And, you know, there's all, this is also brought into question in some circles. Like, I mean, the games media loves a good, you know, you know, navel gaze.
Yeah.
So it's now, you know, in certain circles, it's, well, hold on, what is the role of a games journalist, and shouldn't you do this, and you're not, you know, you shouldn't, you're not beholden to them, blah blah. Well, it's not that simple, really, because I think unless you work for a broadsheet, right, unless you work for like Washington Post or whatever, you kind of are intrinsically connected to the games industry, right? As someone who runs a media business, games media business, we're intrinsically tied to the ups and downs of the games industry. I mean, you're already starting to see layoffs in some games media businesses, right? All the tough, horrible, horrific year the games industry's had is coming home to roost to us, to you know, to various outlets, and I fear that that's going to get worse next year. So, you know, I do think that we should be, you know, it's not what you, look, I love journalism more than anyone, and I'm the first person you're going to see come out and call bullshit on, you know, you know, people who are breaching ethics, or, you know, content creators, you know, not disclosing properly they're getting paid for their coverage and blah blah blah. But we also, you know, we're entertainment press, really, right? We kind of like, it's like the film press. We're benefiting from the success of that industry, and we care about the health of that industry. I mean, it's only like a few weeks ago that everyone was rightly, you know, lambasting the Game Awards for not highlighting the, you know, the troubles of the games industry this year, including us, by the way. I wrote an op-ed about that, criticizing them for that. That was only a few weeks ago. And now it's like a lot of the same people are saying, well, no, this is, you know, it's ridiculous that you wouldn't cover this.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of those poor developers like a couple of weeks ago, and now it's like, fuck the developers, like, leak the contents. It's like,
and that's fine, right? Like,
yeah,
this is people grow, and we are a young industry, right? One of the reasons I loved working in the games media and covering the games industry was because we were young, and because it evolved all the time. Like, you know, from when we started, it's unrecognizable now. Yeah. The games industry. Like the number of people that it reaches, and the kinds of games that you can make, and the messages that you're able to put into those. And so as the media covering that, you know, we can grow too. And I think that's okay. I think that's okay, you know, for an outlet that did cover some of that other stuff to go, you know what, we're not going to cover this one. And we've learned, you know, a lot of the criticism, I think, is coming from, There's chatter of this in the games media, which I think is totally valid. That's what I'm talking about. A lot of it coming from consumers, I think, is coming from bad actors.
Oh yeah, console war fodder.
It's console war. Yeah. It's console war bollocks. It totally is. Like, every person, bar none, in my replies to my tweet saying we're not going to cover that has got an Xbox avatar.
Yep.
Or, you know, clear, you know, past history of like just console war nonsense. And guys, like, you know, it's okay. You don't, it's okay, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we gave Gran Turismo 7, 3 out of 5?
Yeah,
like,
I gave Starfield a 5, and I get more abuse for that than anything. So,
like,
just,
it's okay,
calm
guys.
Down. Merry Christmas, console war is over.
Speaking of Starfield, when I was in the tube today, I was thinking of something. Do you remember this year's worst marketing stunt when they put up like 1,000 different Starfield ads.
Yeah.
And say to everyone, go find them all, and everyone's like, nah. Like, it's people like 9 or 10 went up, and people went, oh, there's one in this tube station, one in this tube station, one in this tube station, and people went, oh, they're all just in tube stations. Yeah. Never mind. That was the end of it. There was no big treasure.
It's a spaceship. It's a red spaceship. It's a blue spaceship. Prior to this episode, I reached out on Twitter to the VGC maniacs for questions, and boy did we get a lot of them. My glamorous assistant, Chris Scullion, is about to hand me the tome of questions.
Hello.
Can you hand me this tome,
yeah,
Chris?
Yeah, I'm just getting the tome.
You just turn off your hacked Game Boy games on your phone.
I'm still on flight mode, you see.
Ah, I see.
Close all of these leaked documents.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Sitting looking at redacted images. Nothing to do with games, but they're certainly redacted.
Remove all the... Every time I post some three attractive women instantly like it. Funnily enough, I'm getting really popular.
Yeah.
Ever since Elon Musk took over, I don't know what he's done, but like I'm insatiable.
I like that guy.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Let's get down to business. I like this as a good starting off point from Danielle Partis. Who would win in a fight? Please share your working. That is between the three of us currently present in this room. Who would win in a fight?
Well, you chug Monster for breakfast.
I do.
And if you gave me some of that, I'd just like get really bad indigestion and I'd be out of the fight. So,
Chris, you give me the vibe of, you know, that episode of The Simpsons where they're all, the Yakuza and the Mafia are fighting, yeah, on the lawn.
The quiet guy.
It's like, he's going to do something cool. That's the Chris Scullion move for me.
I just study the situation and act accordingly. If I can avoid violence, I will.
How humped are you if your glasses are away? Because when mine's are off, I'm effectively blind.
Okay, I'm short-sighted, so I would imagine it's going to be close quarters combat anyway, so I'll be all right. But
Andy with a longbow?
Just punch him in the leg.
Just snipe. Yeah, I've got no bones about saying I'd probably lose that one.
When was the last time you were in a fight, if ever?
I've never been in a fight. I got punched once at school.
Did you deserve it?
By a bully? No, I know.
Of course you would say that.
The lad never amounted to anything. But other than that, I've never actually been in a fight.
Andy, you must have been in a few rucks. Yeah, a few Saddam ashes.
School though.
Yeah. Not since then?
No.
Not on a night out?
No.
Someone looks at you wrongly in a bar?
No, I don't think so. No, I usually hang out with larger men.
Yeah.
So I'll do it.
Yeah. The only larger men than me I could be hanging about with is like the Great Khali in The Big Show. So
the Paisley Sumo. Yeah.
Aki Bono. I've not been in a fight since school either. Much to my great disappointment. I feel like a fight would hurt more nowadays just at the sheer the age of your body. It's pure not worth it.
That's the thing. It's like I get the feeling if I was in a fight, I'd be okay during the fight, but then like 9 hours later I'd go, wait a minute,
yeah,
I've just been absolutely hammered and I wouldn't be able to move for a week.
Fair enough. Next is from Jonathan Wright. Why hasn't Andy written a book yet? And if he did, what would it be about?
I can't be asked. This is the easy It's the honest answer. I've always threatened to write a rare book.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to you guys about that.
I think you should.
I could do a decent job of that. Like, because obviously I got some well-connected friends who worked there and are working there. I think I could do a good job of the real story, but I don't know. Like, number one, it's the motivation. I mean, I'm a bit busy at the moment doing this thing. And the other thing is, does anyone really care anymore? Like, I feel like it's, when me and Chris were younger, like when we were like young journalists, sort of like everyone cared about everything in games because games were young, right?
Mm-hmm.
You only had 20 years to deal with. Whereas now, like I remember, like now it's sort of like the first time, like the first real time, like in mass market terms that people, like you have father and sons playing games, right?
Yeah.
Whereas it's sort of like, it was like our generation. There were ones who were older, but that was still a niche thing then, right? Like, gaming in the 80s was niche.
Yeah.
And so now it's sort of like, for the first time, it feels like there's a lot of stuff that we're excited about that just half the audience don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
And I do think that we're dwindling. Who care about the history of Ultimate Play the Game?
Well, I'd read it.
Yeah, you're into your books. You're a massive book pervert. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say, I'd read an 8-page article about Jetpack.
Hazy or Hazy writes in and asks, this is a question for you two, as far as I'm aware, what was slash will be the first game you let your child play and why, Chris? Mortal Kombat.
She's not really good at the combos. Yeah. The first one she played was Forza Horizon, because you can take her into, like, we're just at an open field.
Yeah.
Just tell her,
just press, spin donut.
Press that to go. Pretty much, so she just spun donuts. But after like half an hour, she kind of figured out how to steer a bit, so she would drive to the beach and kind of just go around the edge of the beach and all that. Then she played the Peppa Pig game and wasn't in there. I was like, okay, she's got taste, because it's garbage. It's garbage.
What is the console Peppa Pig? Is that the one with the Queen in it that has the...
No, that was a sequel.
Oh, okay.
God rest her indeed. No, it was called My Friend Peppa Pig.
Mm.
So you create your avatar at the start. Basically, you want a rabbit or a fucking dog.
Yeah.
And then...
Mage.
Archer. And then you just basically, Peppa Pig goes, hello, come and do this. And you just walk about and... press the A button on a load of things. She wasn't in it. But she does loads of kind of iPhone and Apple Arcade stuff now, which is annoying. She's up for Resident Evil 4 when it comes out.
I heard that Resident Evil 4 port's absolutely terrible, so that'd be a good place for her to start.
It doesn't work on my phone.
It doesn't work on your phone?
No,
do you not have the new
15,
one?
No. It's supposed to be for 15.
Yeah, but I've got Pro, 14.
Right? Oh, I've got the 14 as well.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to work on anything other than 15 Pro, right?
It's just elitism.
That's the point of it.
Elitism.
Andy, first... game you let your kid play or first?
Well, it probably would have been ukulele because I would have been working on it. But it's probably easier to say the first game they finished, Mario 3D World.
Nice.
I find the from my experience, the 3D one's a lot easier for kids because there's less lose states, and they can sort of like explore at their own pace, moving around a 3D environment. There's less pressure as well.
Yeah. I think when I properly get into it, because after Christmas I'm going to properly start, because she's 5 and a half now. It's like, it's time.
It's time to go on with it.
I know, come on.
My 7-year-old played Animal Crossing for 152 hours this year.
Jesus.
That's dedication. I'll probably start her properly on Lego games,
mm-hmm.
because obviously you can't die in them and all that kind of stuff, so that'll probably be a safe one. But
that's an excellent segue there, Chris. Thank you for that.
What about not dying?
About Lego games.
All right, I was going to say the next question is, how do you feel about death?
How do you feel about death? Not that bothered. Tim Spencer writes in and asks, favourite Lego game, Chris?
Lego creative director.
Yeah.
Putting us on the spot.
It's Lego Dimensions with a shadow.
God rest Lego Dimensions.
Oh, mate. I was obsessed with that game. That is the best Lego game by an absolute a thousand furlongs.
It's not though, is it?
It's not.
It is. 100% is. Because all the open worlds, every toy you bought, every IP had its own open world game built in it. So if you put Mr. T one down.
I don't want to play Mr. T Lego.
I want to play Mr. T. And you got Back to the Future Lego in it. You had E.T. Lego. You had Beetlejuice Lego. Mm. Like everything you bought had its own. Nah, that's the one.
See, Matt, the boring answer is the most recent Lego Star Wars one, because it's like...
Oh, that is the best one.
It is the best one.
It's the best one.
Yeah, but that feels like cheating, because that's
so
like...
So your favourite one? Change the question. What's your favourite
Favourite Lego one? Maybe the first Lego Star Wars one.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
The one, I mean, it's the prequels, so it's like the worst films by a mile, but that was the first ever game that I got and completed in one day. And then when I said to my mum I completed it, she went off her fucking head.
I was going
to
say, how old were you? Because I remember playing that with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
I was like 22.
I must have been about 10 or something like that. And I played through it, finished it, and told my mum that I was completed it. And she was like, well, keep playing it. Play it again. That's it.
Unlock all the characters.
Yeah. There was a simplicity back then to... the Lego games when Yoda would die and he'd make like all those noises. That's peak Lego games.
Lego games started going downhill when they started putting voice acting in them.
See, I knew this is a common trope that Lego shouldn't speak, and I kind of get that because they did a lot of good like physical comedy when they couldn't speak and stuff like that. Like in the Lego Harry Potter games, when a character dies, like a character that is a child in the films dies, Dumbledore like hands his dad an instruction book to put them back together. Like, that's quite funny. But yeah, it's
And also when Vader says to Luke, "I'm your father," he just shows up like an old holiday photo of the two of them together.
Yeah,
that was quite good.
Oh, one up that. Video games got worse when the characters started speaking.
There we go. He's not wrong.
He is wrong.
As soon as you heard "It's a me, Mario," you should have just dropped a bomb on it then.
Which, like, for me, that's like a lot of that is just poor onboarding. I mean, when I was working on games at PlaySonic, you try and put as much as the tutorial and the story into the game itself, right? Mm. Like, I mean, you don't stop in Elden Ring to watch 50 cutscenes. Like, it's just a distraction. I mean, I'm up for it if the game is that's what it's about, right? That's the appeal. I mean, obviously, Alan Wake 2 would clearly be worse.
Yeah, no cutscenes in Alan Wake 2. It's just straight, like,
there are a lot of games that would be better if they took out the bloody cutscenes.
I mean, all those two modern Zeldas, the Enuma Zeldas, I feel like every time there's a cutscene I'm like, oh,
that is probably one of the best examples. Like, those games are actually shitter for those cutscenes. I don't care. Like, even Nintendo has said they don't care about the story in those games, right? So why are you making me sit through this bloody cutscene with the fish man?
That's why I
don't care.
That's why I never play Ocarina again. Because that the first 45 minutes of Ocarina is unbearable. Like, having to go through all the... When he wakes up when the fairy goes through the village, fucking hammering the start button and nothing's happening. Can't be having it. I'll tell you a Lego game that deserves more discourse is Lego Rock Band.
Oh, yeah, Lego
Rock Band.
Because
you had Lego versions of David Bowie and Spinal Tap and Queen were in it.
That was very... Those songs were very briefly exportable into the larger Rock Band universe. That the only game they never let you export was the Beatles one, but you could do the Lego one for a wee while. See if you want to play any of the Rock Band songs.
Don't hear it. Go on, do your pitch in for the illegal content.
I'm not telling you to look at any illegal content. I'm just saying, Clone Hero, pretty good. Just saying.
So I think I've heard that before.
I'm just putting it out there. I get £1 every time someone downloads it. So,
well, it paid for your flight, didn't it?
Yeah. Next question. This comes from Rhea Bevan from The Gamer. Can you please say something nice about Sonic? I will abstain from this. Chris?
I mean, that's pretty easy. Mm. I've always been into Sonic games ever since a youth.
Yeah.
The most recent ones have been really good. Superstars has been good. Frontiers was good. Mania was excellent. It's a good time to be a Sonic fan. Even, I've not watched the Sonic Prime on Netflix. That looks a bit...
I think there's never been a better time to be a Sonic fan, right?
Definitely not. It's,
I mean, it's nowhere near as good as Mario, and it never has been. I mean, I was a bigger Sonic fan when I was a kid than a Mario fan, although I had both. But yeah, like I really like the leadership as well. Is it Oshima, the creator, who's back involved? Can't remember the head of Sonic Team.
Izuka.
Izuka-san, yeah, I really like him. I got to interview him a couple of times in the last year. They seem to have finally figured it out, right? I mean, Sonic was in a really bad place, like 10, 15 years
ago. All sex and the Black Knight and
up
all that
until
stuff.
yeah, like the Wii era, they didn't know what to do with it, and they've just really figured it out now, which is sort of like they've got these two strands, these two audiences, and they just like keep them happy. Like they put out like an old school Sonic, and then they put out like a Frontiers, and then they do another old school one, and everyone's like happy. And you know, I wish Nintendo would do that with some of their franchises, like also, especially Zelda. Now that Zelda's gone in, you know, the open world direction, which I can't be dealing with.
you just want like a 15-hour adventure kind of thing,
definitely.
Well, no, so I absolutely loved the Link's Awakening remake.
Yeah,
that was great. And Link Between Worlds as well is like one of my favorite Zeldas. And it's not like, I'm not talking about that, oh, they're, you know, top down traditional style. I just mean like, show me some well crafted, you know, content, some amazing. I buy Nintendo games because they're the masters at entertaining you. I don't want to entertain myself.
I love playing through Skyward Sword again when they re released that, because it's like, I know that over the years it's not become considered the best of the bunch, but just after,
I hear it's a 10 in some places.
After Breath of the Wild, going back to something where it was just like you sit down for a couple of days and be done with it. It was just a nice feeling just to play like a nice game, a good solid game, and then just go on with my life.
See, I'm kind of the opposite. Like the old style Zeldas, the only one I ever really clicked with was Twilight Princess. just because I was like, I got it for the Wii.
It's got the best dungeons in any Zelda.
Yeah, and it was like, it was one of the only Wii games I had, so I was like, right, I better play through all this, because there was a limited budget for games, but...
It's just the problem is they became stale, right? Like, they're able to reinvent Mario with every iteration, basically, the 3D iterations, whereas Zelda was kind of the same, except they'd shoehorn in a new gimmick item, right? They couldn't make the changes quite, kind of deep enough.
Yeah.
So I don't think there was ever a problem with the formula. It's just they didn't really do much with it. I mean, I'd love to see, and I can see from the discourse on social media over Aonuma saying, I mean, he was quite dismissive in this interview. This month. I can't remember who it was with, so forgive me. Where he said like, "Oh, I can understand why people want nostalgia," you know, but he was quite dismissive about why would we go back to the old style, right? And he's like, "Well, no one's asking you to go back to these linear games. They're just saying, could you kind of like perhaps create a middle ground?"
Yeah.
You know, to me, Breath of the Wild is so clearly a game designed for a handheld, right? Because I remember having this discussion when they announced Switch, and there was a few journalists in the wherever I was at the time, we were talking about, and I said, my fear is it's not going to be a home console that you can take on the go. It's going to be a portable that you plug into your TV. Yeah. So I've never been a big portable guy, because Nintendo aren't stupid. Like, they make those games for quick blast play, right?
Yeah.
And there's no surprise that instead of like six chunky dungeons, there's 100 like 5 minute ones.
Yeah.
And it's a bit unsatisfying, right?
Yeah.
We just want some awesome scripted dungeons again. I mean, A Link Between Worlds, a lot of people didn't play that, but that's the way to do it. It's brilliant. There's like a character who you rent items from, right? And it sort of solves the whole thing, because you can only have one item at a time. So by renting the items, you can do the dungeons in any order, and they're still completely bespoke, like based on that item, and you can tackle it in that order.
Breath of the Wild is Nintendo's Ubisoft game.
That sounds like the intro to a video essay.
You've got the towers, you've got a million...
It's like that meme, debate me.
And I don't necessarily dislike that, because I quite like Ubisoft. I didn't turn on Ubisoft games like some people did. I quite like seeing a map full of icons and getting a bit of busy working. I can understand how it gets exhausting doing it year in, year out.
Yeah.
But every time I dip into a Ubisoft game, I go,
See, I don't mind. I don't know what it is. It will depend on the day that a map full of icons will do it for me. I don't know what it was with Far Cry 6. It just broke my brain to the point where I was like, this is enough. I can't be doing this anymore. But like, yeah, it's... I mean, my thoughts on Breath of the Wild are public knowledge at this point, but I think that it would be nice for Zelda and for Zelda fans to get something that isn't one of these kind of massive open world games. They've really set themselves up for... there's going to be weird expectations attached to whenever they show what the next Zelda is.
Yeah, but I think it's a generational thing as well. Like, excuse me, I honestly think if Breath of the Wild came out when I was 25, I would have sat and killed it, you know, for a week. But now I just don't have time for that.
Yeah.
But back to the original question, yeah, Sonic's good.
No, he's not. A couple of questions from Matt Ombler. Any update on this? Oh, Andy's
dying.
Andy is dying on the pod. He's going out like Tommy Cooper. God rest him.
God rest him.
That is probably the way I'll go.
If I go out and I'm live streaming, I've told my family, I've told Laura, just let it go. Just let the live stream go. Leave the VOD up. I want people to be able to see it. Any update on this Final Fantasy IX remake? Chris, how are you getting on with it?
Mate, I'll tell you, it looks a lot like a PlayStation 1 game.
Yeah.
Like, just get under the...
Some people might think it's the same game as the original, but they'd be wrong.
Funnily enough, it does only run on PlayStation 1. Is there supposed to be a Final Fantasy? Am I missing a joke? Is there supposed to be a Final Fantasy?
They're working on it. We're not the people to ask about that. No. We don't really report on Final Fantasy stuff. Alex Donaldson over at RPG. He knows. Like, I could like DM him now and he'd just tell me.
Yeah, I'd send you a box copy of it.
If it's not, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's the only one that actually clicked with me.
It's a bit awkward. Like, I don't really like Final Fantasy.
No,
that's what I'm saying. It's the only
Ben
one.
Star coming out later.
It is the only one that clicked. Well, I'm safe because it's his favorite. But it's the only one that ever clicked.
I don't think I've ever finished a Final Fantasy game.
Final Fantasy VII remake and Final Fantasy 16 are like big hack and slash Devil May Cry action games. Like, they're not.
Yeah, I don't like them either.
See, I'd be more inclined to play through a Kingdom Hearts. even though I've never done that either. Again, like
you're Johnny Disney as well. I'm surprised you've not played through the Kingdom Hearts.
My brain's just not up to it.
You've just got to dedicate like a month to one of those games right now these days. But I've just reviewed Mario RPG and I loved it.
Yeah.
So I'd probably be, I honestly think that if I did go sit down and play one of those, I'd probably be really into them. It's just like,
it's just
I was never a PlayStation guy when I was a kid.
My problem is I used to like RPGs, but like when I was at Fish Nintendo magazine, the amount of RPGs the DS got, and I was always the one who reviewed the stuff. So it basically became, I started getting like Vietnam flashbacks anytime an RPG would come in post O&M, because I was just like, just imagining like late nights and like 50-hour games.
It's good fun.
Oh, doing the captures. Can you come into the office and sit on the, this is what it was like in the old days. So you'd have to come into the office, like come back from the pub. Oh, we need some captures and get the DS, the debug DS that's attached to a capture machine.
Yeah.
And take some screenshots.
And the debug DS was the original style DS, like the big chunky one with the tiny screen. And it had a big, enormous, thickest wire you've ever seen in your life came out of it. So you couldn't actually, it felt like one of those ones that was in, like in the booths and when you go to your shop. So you couldn't actually move it. So you were kind of rigidly playing this thing. And in the really early days, it wasn't even captured. It wasn't even hooked up to software that captured a perfect screenshot. In the really early days, it was hooked up to like composite cables. So if anyone's got old official Nintendo magazines.
If there's any like old issues of official Nintendo magazine with my byline on them, with suspicious screenshots all from the first 10 minutes, it's because I was in the pub and they made me come back from the pub.
So weird. This game looks like it's all tutorial.
Do you remember when they sent lassies with 3DSs attached to them to gaming offices?
It was at E3. Oh, so when they announced it, the curtains came up and then it was just like a load of ladies with wearing 3DSs, and it's so, like, that's what E3 used to be like. I'm sure they did it with like Game Boys and stuff before that, like Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Micro. And it's like, you're right, you're good, yeah.
I used to, that's the thing about people, like this, I know people think that there's still a lot of work to do in terms of equality and representation and all that, but like you have our word as people who've been in it for long enough, it is so much better than it used to be.
Yeah, didn't have any 3DS geezers, did you? There's no guys walking about with 3DSs on them.
I still awkwardly remember the look on the handful of female colleagues' faces back in the day when one of the Games Media Awards ceremonies took place in a burlesque club. And in between all the awards, people came out and did burlesque shows, and you're just looking at the woman just going, what's going on here? So like, things have changed.
Yeah. That was the only controversial thing to ever happen at the GMAs. Next question.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Who is the hardest person in games journalism? Who do we think?
Well, see, hardest in which way?
Kirk McKean used to be an actual, used to run a strip club. I reckon the guy could probably handle himself, I reckon.
Yeah.
Does Simon Miller still do games journalism?
Oh, yeah, oh, that's a good point.
He's an actual wrestler.
Yeah, I think he mostly does wrestling now, but yeah, I was thinking that.
And what about Joel? He does men's fitness magazines and that. Joel Snape, wasn't he?
Joel Snape?
I'm talking like 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that is his name. I've met him like once. Mm. But he was solid. He was like a proper weightlifter and everything. But
Tom Ivan?
Tom East, maybe. I can't even think. I was like, Chandra Nair was quite solid. But he didn't come strike me as a fighter.
Yeah.
Chandra.
Can't think this conversation's ever come up.
I cannot believe that. I think Andy Robinson, just because he's 8'2". This is what people never realise about you. See, when Danny found out how tall you were, she literally DM'd me being like, Andy's so tall.
And then I'm probably not as tall as you.
We're about the same. And I was when I met you in person.
Maybe I'll
do
future podcast standing up. Put the camera on the floor.
Next question from Rosalie. It's a classic. Meal deal combo of choice, Chris?
I've not had a meal deal in ages. What's a meal deal? A sandwich, a snack and a drink?
Sandwich, a snack and a drink, yeah. Don't fuck about here and get three drinks.
No, your sandwich is just your normal kind of whatever's got chicken in it and no mayo. It's some sort of meat, but mayo can piss off. Snack, can't go wrong with a double decker if available.
Now we're talking. A fellow double decker enthusiast.
And for drink, Iron Brew or Coke.
Mm. Andy?
I'd go for a BLT.
Yeah.
It's funny, I had this conversation at the Game Awards. At this Xbox mixer, I met the some of the ladies who work on Kotaku.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, they both had lived in the UK for a while. And they were talking about how they miss meal deals. I was like, oh yeah, what meal deal did you get? And it was like, egg cress. Yeah.
Oh, that's just pissing on the concept.
That's up your primary school.
Or like, the other choice was a prawn. Like, no, don't get prawns from Tesco's, mate.
You're just asking for rubella.
Maybe like some of their dry sushi.
Oh, lovely. So a BLT, what's the snack, what's the drink?
I don't need a snack. That's enough. BLT.
So you're basically...
I don't need a drink either.
You're flicking a middle finger at the idea of a meal deal.
We never really got a meal deal. Like, so when we worked in West London, I used to get like... M&S used to do one of those like massive like salad stackers. They're like, massive.
M&S did the big like, meal
just,
deal, didn't they?
You can get like, I think it's like a chicken one. It's like chicken and mayo and like just all kinds of like salad and you mix it up. You could like assault someone with it. That's how thick it is.
I forgot about the M&S meal deal. M&S meal deal used to get like a big cob thing with like mustard in it.
Do you remember we used to go and get the escalope? There's a sandwich shop. There's loads of sandwich shops around Baker Street where we used to be. And you go and get like, they make you what you want, right?
Mm.
I don't know how this started. You know, like chicken escalope.
Yeah.
Like massive. And we'd get them to make us sandwiches and they'd be like, oh my, like, just, you need to like unhook your jaw to get it in.
I've heard that before. I get a chick, if I'm in Asda, it's a chicken triple. So you get the three different varieties of a chicken sandwich.
Yeah, I can't beat a chicken triple.
And then for a snack, I'm usually a packet of crisps guy, a packet of prawn cocktail Walkers, just because it's whatever to me. The sandwich is the main event, and then true to type, a can of Monster, because your value getting a can of Monster.
That's true.
See,
if I'm ever meal dealing, it's usually in a work environment.
Yeah.
So I can't do crisps because then you're greasing up the keyboard.
You can wash your hands.
I've not got time to wash my hands. I'm writing. Fucking
Chris takes a shit and then immediately runs back to his
no
desk.
Time to wash.
Do you know how much? This is a call out post. Do you know how much a can of Monster was in WH Smith in Glasgow Airport this morning? £3.29. Used to be £1 a can. That's Rishi Sunak for you.
I remember when it used to be £1 a pint.
Yeah.
I used to go out on a tenner. That included bus fare and meat and chips.
But we're entering 10p Freddo territory here. There's no way that a Freddo's 10 pence anymore.
Look, it's a Christmas podcast. We can do what we want.
as long as the readers ask us.
The readers.
The readers. Yeah. Sorry, listen. I say readers because people read the site. They don't listen to us.
No, they certainly do not. Dave plays games. He also asks questions. Should I give up hope of seeing a Wind Waker Twilight Princess Switch Shadow Drop? Chris, out of 10, how likely do you think this happens?
I would have just stopped it. Should I give up hope? it'll happen.
Yeah?
Yeah?
Out of 10, put your money on it.
7.8.
That's hee-haw. That's no money at all.
Like 8.7 then.
Okay.
I agree with Chris, yeah.
8.7? I'm going
They've got it set. It'll come out when the next week and the
next week. Oh, exclusive.
It depends how quickly they're going to drop the Switch like a wet towel, right?
Yeah.
Even the 3DS like had some half decent games after the Switch came out.
And so it's not like shit zone like switches.
And it depends how they're going to handle like backwards compatibility and stuff like that. They're going to like they got 100 plus million users on this thing. So they're gonna, and the way that they keep making games, the easiest way to keep making games for that is like that sort of stuff. Yeah. Ports.
I've got no doubt it's sitting there, or is ready to be churned out. So like, whenever they decide we need something to keep the Switch owners happy,
release Star Fox Zero.
Just chuck it out there with absolutely no thought.
Finally, press the button on Metroid Prime 2 remastered, and then 3 in another 9 months' time.
Yeah. Jeff Grubb will finally be vindicated for all the pish he talks. Chris and Andy, I suppose, but you've reviewed significantly. Well, I suppose it probably evens out. Yeah, certainly not with Chris.
Neither of us have reviewed anything.
Chris, what's that? This comes from Tim Spencer as well, because he's apparently the TT Games have just shut up for the holidays and he's just sitting there asking us questions.
Did you get, to be fair, you get
they're in the office. They go, lads, anyone got any questions for the VGC podcast?
Spencer, Tim Spencer was asked any questions. He just opened his soul to just asked about 17 questions.
Tim, if you're listening to this, whatever Lego game you're working on at the minute, I want to go around a corner and just see three wee Lego men talking on a podcast. One of them with a slick back haircut, one of them a baldy with glasses, and one of them black hair with glasses. I'm just saying, that's all. If they can put the red letter media guys in games, I mean, it's 50-50 on popularity.
I've never been in one game that backfired.
Oh,
what's the bloody question?
What review score would you change if you could?
I gave Silent Hill Shattered Memories 80 something, and I would have given it 90 something in hindsight. Because like after I finished it, I just kept thinking about it and playing it over and over again. It's a massively underrated game.
You had that right in the
It's because it's like stuck in my mind for all this time. I've been asked that a few times, and that's always the answer. Like, it came out on Wii and PS2 and PSP as well. So like 8 people bought it, and this was during a period when people were saying Silent Hill's garbage. Silent Hill's garbage. It's like there is a good one out there. Nobody's touching it. So I'd love to see that remastered or remade at some point because it deserves another.
Not your Balon review, no? You gave Balon like 4 out of 5 or something like that, didn't you?
I gave that.
Edel's Choice.
Did I give that 2 or 3?
Something like that.
There's worse games.
Well,
that's
yes.
That's all I'll say.
Andy, worse games. You ever regretted the review?
I can't remember, mate. Oh, there'd probably be a few.
Yeah,
but you'd have to pull up my Metacritic or something.
I gave Red Steel 90 on the Wii.
That's bad.
But that was, in my defence, it wasn't until it came out that everyone suddenly realised it was buggy as hell, and just by pure chance, I didn't encounter any bugs during my entire playthrough.
So suddenly,
everyone said, "This game's broken." I was like, "Is it?" Like, I finished it.
That's the exact thing that happened to me with Horizon Forbidden West. I encountered basically nothing, and then all the reviews come out, and it's like, "Oh, I've fallen through the world. Las Vegas is gone." And I'm like,
"And it's like, but that's the thing. People don't get it. You get people going, how did you not point this out? Is it because I'm one person?" Yeah. When the game comes out, millions of people.
Are there people like normal consumers have no idea what it's like to the review environment, right? Yeah. Like it's completely unlike the consumer experience, right? When you're totally on your own, mm-hmm. you got no one else to speak to, there's no YouTube to look at, nothing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
These games are always really buggy. Most people haven't experienced any bugs. It's just like Assassin's Creed games and like Cyberpunk and stuff. I think I saw like a couple of bugs in Cyberpunk and I noted it. It might be a bit buggy, but nothing like what's on the internet, right? And everyone's like, "Oh, this is insane, Age of Mythology." Because there's like a million people playing the game right now.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And the bugs get amplified as well. So one person finds one particularly bad one, that becomes the bug that gets shared. The thing that's happened once becomes basically the defining thing that basically sums up the entire game. And it's a bit...
All the compilations have the exact same video, like over and over, it just added one thing.
Well, everyone, when we talk about Pokemon Legends, everyone shows that one screenshot of him standing over like the kind of the empty lake thing, and it's like, it looks a bit shit, but it never looks that bad.
Yeah, I would probably say Gran Turismo 7, take another star off it.
I honestly don't know. Like, it doesn't. It's a shame. Like, OpenCritic or whatever doesn't go back that far, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's some ones that I reviewed like 15 years ago that were bad. I reviewed ODST Halo ODST for OXM, the cover.
It's a banger,
and that is a banger. Like, I don't know what score I gave it, but I'd still put it up.
Yeah. What a game, man. The pistol on that, Jesus Christ, what
it's
a game.
It's the best Halo game.
Yeah, I'd go along with that.
Yeah. Maybe Reach.
Yeah. I mean, it's only single player. The raw multiplayer experience from 3 is probably my favourite Halo ever. But
yeah, it was just kind of plugged into it. Yeah. ODST is like an expansion, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. ODST is fucking sick, though. So, so good. I want to go over my reviews when I was reviewing stuff for like KeenGamer.Russia, where they were definitely selling codes. They were definitely getting review codes and then selling them, and I was getting games any kind of score, man. I reviewed Ukulele. That was the first game. That was the first game I ever had under embargo. It was
so
Ukulele.
I think your answer is that in hindsight you would have given that a higher score.
My answer to that is the casino level, and I'll leave it at that.
I'm Googling, right? I've just Googled Andy Robinson game reviews, right? There's some reviews here. I don't even remember playing these games.
I think you'll find I was a diligent employee and that last night I was bigging up Ukulele in the Impossible Lair, which is currently only £2.50 on the Switch eShop.
It's not the second one, but
I don't get any money from it, so I don't give a shit.
Second one's fantastic. The writing's atrocious, but other than that, it's what a game. What a platformer.
I left before that one, Chip, mate. Changed a lot of my words.
Did you not write all the biographies for the bees?
No, my ones were better.
Oh,
don't get started on that. No, they literally did change it. That's when I went, they changed it. I had my bee biographies were absolute bangers. I spent ages on them.
That's enough. I think they over Christmas, they changed bee bios.
They changed them because I did these bee bios and they were all like, they're all like jokes that I put like a ton of attention into. And when they left, they changed all the bees to like be based on their mates. Oh, and the bio would be like, oh, this is Crispy. He loves reviewing games and writing game books.
That sounds like
great game. Great game.
I like Crispy.
My bee bios were better.
It was an excellent game though.
Sure. Michael Gulliver writes in, says, hey guys, big time, long time. As a well-used and trusted news resource by other outlets, do you feel you're well-cited and compensated, parentheses, traffic-wise? Thanks for all you do and love the pod. That's a question for you, Andy.
That's a difficult question, isn't it? It'd be nice if everyone, you know, like, but there's two different things, right? Like, there's success in reputation of our brand, the influence of our work, and then who clicks over.
Yeah.
And there's tons more other sites than us that get tons more clicks that don't have the influence we do. So it's swings and roundabouts. I mean, I love seeing, Kinda Funny and, IGN and everyone else like regularly source stories from us. Mm-hmm. That's great. It means we're doing our job well. If you know, there's a few people from that decide to click over and read us directly, then brilliant. But
yeah,
it's nice to be... that other journalists trust their work enough to kind of cite them.
It's a process. I think it's easy to forget how young we still are as a site. Like it's, these things happen in stages, and we're just in a stage just now where you set up and kind of no one's heard of you at first, and then you eventually establish yourself with exclusives. You be there first and you be there fast. The sites start linking to you. So over time, when we're now at the stage where we're waiting for the process, where it's at the stage now where people have got to relearn their habits, like when readers, yeah, because everyone has like a set of sites in their head that they just go to subconsciously when they load up, and I'd still load up, I won't name it, but a video game site that has drastically dropped in quality over the years.
Overload?
Well, but my brain just
video
like,
games chronicle
CVG, what happened there? But like it's just muscle memory, like you just,
yeah.
So we're at the stage now where the more people cite us in news stories, eventually people are going to start saying their name appears a lot, maybe I should just check them out.
There's nothing more important today and in the future with what's coming and AI etc than a trusted source.
100%.
Like, there's nothing more important than that. you know, and it is wonderful, you know, going to the Game Awards and speaking to so many developers out there that were showing me, like, going, like, look, we read your site, mm-hmm. you know, and we read your site and, like, The Verge, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, or your site and IGN or whatever. It's great to see that.
Yeah, definitely. We're getting there.
Yeah,
we're
happy. Nice. I also like that every time I'm on Kind of Funny, I get a big comedy sack of money for all this, all the stories they take off us. So I feel well compensated.
Did you take it back and give it to Chris?
Yeah, we share it. That's why we've got a box at Celtic Park.
We
have been asked multiple times by Elderly Goose and by Lloyd Combs, what are we playing over Christmas, Andy? I'm not going to even ask her.
You got half an hour?
Andy, what are you playing over Christmas?
Honestly, it's probably going to be old shit, isn't it?
Are we going to play Warzone? Are we going to go back?
Oh, yeah, we need to play Warzone. I've still not got the new map down.
Yeah.
I've not had time. But 100% we're going to do some drunken Warzone. Usually what happens is that he just, like, shotguns his way through the game and I'm just behind him going, "Guh-huh."
The banjo, like, tactic.
Get me back up. Revive me.
It's me and three of the most cockney people you've ever met in your entire life.
Oh, bloody hell. It's over there.
Oh, they're sitting talking about, like, doing up each other's conservatories and stuff like that. And I'm like, guys, can we go and do this contract now? Can we go to the shop? But you mind that Warzone one where we just sat in the... I was dead. You just sat in the water.
Until everyone else died. I love a cowardly win. The best, my favourite Warzone tactic is from the last map this time last year, when they added the, like, big Chinook helicopters, so you could get in, the whole team could get in it and run around and stuff, and they didn't have that before. And basically, players worked out that you could, if you hovered them over the petrol stations around the map, it refueled them, because they run out of fuel.
Yeah.
That's the balance, right? So what you do is you land straight away, get in one, and then go from petrol station to petrol station, and the team jump out and get, like, petrol canisters, which has more petrol, and you just fly it up as high as you can in a circle and just keep refueling it.
Yeah.
And then until it's, like, the last circle, and it's like... it's like Black Hawk Down. Like, guys, like, trying to run between, like, to the next circle, just getting mowed down by the two cockney geezers in the back of the... And then
the thing about doing that is, though, it ruins your ability to play
literally,
the game normally.
They literally, like, took it out of the game. They took the helicopter out of the game.
But it completely atrophies your own skill. So if it gets to the point where you need to shoot someone, you're like, I don't know how to shoot someone in a one-on-one situation. Like, it's brutal. Me and my partner were playing tons of Shipment and Rust when that was in the multiplayer, like Hopper, before the new map started. So when the new map starts and you're having these long interactions, I'm like, I've got no idea how to do these kind of fights anymore.
I tell you what, I might have to start.
For fuck's sake,
is what? Fortnite.
Oh, I'm Lego really Fortnite.
I'm not so much the Lego. I'm curious about this racing game, and I'm curious about this Guitar Hero / Rock Band / Clone Hero clone.
Yeah,
I'm curious to see, especially because, like, I said this before, like, I can't really play Rock Band anymore because my finger. But so
chopped your finger off.
Exactly. So being able to play with a controller, a la Rock Band Unplugged.
Yeah, that was cool. I loaded up a ton of stuff on my Steam Deck. I need to get to help. Started playing Diablo, so I need to go back to that. I haven't played the new Sonic game yet, Superstars.
It's good.
I mean, not since preview. So I've got that loaded up. Nice and short, so I'll probably play it with my daughters.
Yeah.
What else I've got now? I've been playing Viewfinder.
Oh, yeah. It's brilliant. It's in Scotland's own.
Blinded. Good Scottish game. Right?
Yeah. Mario's the only one for me of the biggies this year that I've known.
Oh, mate, you're in for a treat.
Yeah, that's a big Christmas game. But more likely, I'll go around to my mum and dad's and he'll absolutely wreck me at PGA, because that's all he sits and plays on his Series S. He's unbelievable at those PGA games.
Do you know, for about 10, 15 years now, my mum and dad played Dr. Mario against each other every single night. And, like, one night a few months ago, my mum says, "Do you want a game of Dr. Mario?" I was like, "Okay." And she absolutely demolished me. Absolutely. And I play it all the time. Like I said, I was played Dr. Mario for 4 hours on the train today. Dr. Mario 64. She destroyed me, like, countless times at it. They're just like, it must be the only household in the world where the Wii gets put on every night and Dr. Mario.
I'm kind of, like, anticipating the day now when my daughters, like, whoop me at something.
Yeah, it comes to everyone.
Like, they're like, it's interesting, like, speaking to other people with kids of the, like, similar age, and like, oh, they're just getting into games, blah, blah. Like, no, my kids, like, have finished Mario games, Pokemon, they've had a go on Zelda, play Animal Crossing every day. They are going to wallop me at something at some point.
I actually can't wait till Serena gets good, because, like, my wife isn't interested, which is fine. She just doesn't care about games. Since from when I went 16-bit to polygonal, she stopped at that point. But when Serena finally gets good, just having somebody to play co-op and competitively in the house, it'll be amazing. Look, I can't wait for that.
Oh, it is. That's brilliant. Those are my go-to games now. Like, I mean, I sat and played Mario Wonder with my daughters. It was actually a completely new scenario, right? Because I didn't anticipate what it would bring up. Like, cause it's like we went to EGX and they had Mario Wonder there. Mm. And I'd say to like my 6-year-old, like, don't tell anyone we got it at home. like, Daddy, this is the game we got at home. She was literally saying to the staff at the Nintendo booth, going, oh, I've got a secret. And they're like, oh, yeah, what is it? He's like, oh, I can't tell you.
Jesus. Yeah, that's something we need to watch.
Yeah, she's about as good as keeping an embargo as most of the games industry, to be fair. We love a brag. Penultimate question before we get out of here and get pished. Hey, Mikey Park asks, what was your biggest gaming disappointment growing up? The one game you were looking forward to playing more than anything else turned out to be absolute rubbish. My answer, then, now, forever, Brutal Legend. I was fully expecting some kind of God of War hack and slash, some kind of something like that. Turns out to be this RTS kind of thing. And I was like, I could not believe it. Couldn't believe it, Jeff. Chris?
The one that springs to mind is Royal Rumble on the Dreamcast.
Good, a classic.
Which, this is an era where you had No Mercy in the N64 and you had SmackDown on the PlayStation, and those were like the two ones, and then suddenly the Dreamcast was getting one. It was based on an arcade game, so this is going to look shit hot. And it was an absolute mess, because the selling point was it had 9 wrestlers in the ring at the same time, and it was unplayable. It was absolutely unplayable, because the ring was tiny and you couldn't look at anyone.
Yeah.
So you just basically got in and started battering the button, and it was atrocious. That's the one that springs to mind. Like, usually I do my due diligence, and if it's a game that I haven't reviewed, I'll see if it's got good reviews. So usually I'm quite lucky in that most of the games I play end up being good.
Just check Metacritic. Don't even bother reading the reviews. Just score it.
I'm quite a positive person. When it comes to reviewing games, I can kind of find good in most games anyway. So
yeah.
I never really get massively.
I've read your Sonic Frontiers review, mate.
It's a good game. what a cracker.
Andy, a game you were disappointed in?
So this is an infamous story within our old workplace. The N64 magazine, right? Which was the unofficial Nintendo magazine at the time, Future Mag.
Oh God, I'm already in my head spinning.
Christmas, so Zelda Ocarina of Time, right, was the most anticipated game ever. The size game at the time. Like, the day it came out, right, you could not get it anywhere. Like, I've never since have I, and probably never will I again see anything like that, because obviously now we buy games digitally. About three, it came out the same Christmas as Turok 2. And N64 Mag, my favorite game of all time my favorite game at that time was GoldenEye, right? I played it like every single day, played with my friends every single week. And they reviewed it. I think they gave it like something stupid, like 95% or something. And they said it was better, like that was the cover line, better than GoldenEye, right? So I could only buy one. So instead of buying Ocarina of Time, well, I'm going to have to buy Turok 2 now, aren't I? What a load of shit. and you couldn't, like, once I realised my error, because Zelda came out the next week, you couldn't get, I begged my parents, they're like, yeah, all right, get it for you. You couldn't get it anywhere. I mean, I went to every shop within like 30 miles of my house. It was sold out everywhere because everyone pre-ordered it. So in the end, I had to rent it. I rented it from Blockbuster.
That wasn't cheap back then.
Still got it.
Yeah.
Amazing. Blockbuster's
gone now, so I can say that.
It's funny because as soon as you said Turok, one of the big ones for me also is very similar. It was the South Park game, which used the Turok 2 engine on N64.
An iguana, mate.
Yeah.
Those charlatans.
South Park game was, I was the world's biggest South Park fan like, at the time, because it was pretty new at the time. It was only a couple of seasons in.
I've got bigger like disappointments than that though.
But for me, as a massive South Park fan at the time, I was like, this is the South Park game. And then like the first three levels were just a million turkeys just run at you constantly, and you're just throwing snowballs at turkeys over and over and over again. Every time you turn the corner, and like, okay.
Like Yoshi's Story was a pretty big disappointment.
Mm.
Well, probably this is years later. I'm not really a kid at the time, but Perfect Dark Zero is probably my biggest ever disappointment.
Yeah,
what a load of shite. Sorry to my friends who worked on it.
Oh, I actually wanted to answer this question as well. Callum Taylor says, Chris writes books and he's made games. What is your creative speciality outside of video games, Jordan? Video games is my thing. I'm a dino 8-a-side striker. That's about it. Every Thursday I play 8-a-side and I'm the greatest striker that doesn't run you'll ever see. Built like Akin Fenwa.
That's what you need in 5-a-side though, isn't
it?
Yeah. It is.
Because people try and tackle me, and I just go, well, you're not
just,
moving
me. They think, well, right, they think they're like, you know, Pep Guardiola or whatever. I'll just get the big guy and put him in the back. No, stick him in the middle. Yeah. Put him up front.
It's great. It's the white Lukaku, they call me.
It's the cheat
code. They chant it for the rafters. The actual final question.
A bit like Zendaya.
The actual final question, and it was asked a lot, but I'm going to give the credit to Ed, who asked it immediately following this call for questions.
This is just, who do you think you are?
First of all, how dare you? Which club is bigger, West Ham or Celtic?
Well, Celtic.
Well, to quote Andy Robinson's favourite line, conversation
but
over.
But it's not, the thing is, like, but we can go deeper into that, right?
Yeah, there's definitely.
You're like one
of
the biggest cities in like the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got two clubs.
Yeah, well, we've got one club.
How many clubs are in London?
Yeah, look at how many clubs.
Look at how many Premier clubs.
It's a loaded,
that would whoop Celtic, right?
It's a loaded
that
question.
are in London, right? Chelsea,
one.
Arsenal,
nah,
West Ham, Spurs,
West Ham,
Crystal Palace,
Spotswood on a technicality.
Like, it's a loaded question because it depends on how you define bigness, like whether it's fan base size or whether it's money.
No,
I
have no doubt whatsoever. If you put Celtic in the Premier League, then they would be incredibly successful
eventually.
But right now, I think recently we whooped you 5-0, didn't we, with our kids out.
I don't recall. I don't remember the losses. I don't remember the losses.
Yeah. What was the last European Cup you won?
Well, the one last year.
That's not a European Cup.
I think
Cup.
It was six months ago, mate.
That's not a European Cup.
I was there, mate. It was brilliant. Was the last one you won?
We won the European Cup 1967. Thank you very much.
Do you know we're currently on something like a 32 European win streak?
Oh,
and I seem to remember that you've just won your first
in
10 years.
We won one. That was good.
Yeah, we
it's a nice change, isn't it?
We put Copenhagen to Feyenoord to the sword, mate. It wasn't 90 minutes of the worst football you've ever
my
seen.
My dad made a lot of money off of that. Yeah. I was very pleased.
Good times.
Yeah, Celtic's in a great state at the moment.
Like, that sounds really bad, doesn't it? Yeah, because he'd bribed the...
He was on VAR.
Oh... Let's VAR and disallow this podcast. That's it for this week. Next week, I'll cut together a daft wee best of for all our nonsense throughout the year, and then we'll be back in January with your regularly scheduled VGC podcast. Thanks to Grant Kirkhope for use of the VGC podcast.
I just texted him. You know, we put up an article today. Game composers pick their best music of 2023.
Yeah.
And he's not in it. Like he's not. I didn't do it. Matt Olmberg, a great kind of music freelancer, did it. And so I texted him. I know he's on Pacific time. He lives in LA. So like, oh, because I thought he's going to be annoyed when he sees this. So I asked him, like, oh mate, like, if you quick, you tell me what your favorite game music is. Get a bit of, you know, give me some words. I'll put it in. And he just replied, going, yeah, your guy Matt already asked. I can't be bothered.
Oh, Grant, we love him dearly. Until next year, from me, Jordan, it is goodbye. Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Say goodbye, Andy.
Bye.
And we will see you next year.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.